and welcome to Speaking with Joy, a podcast about books, beauty, and music. So make yourself a cup of tea, sit down, and let's begin. The eye is a lamp of the body. If your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light.
The cool, smooth skin of the bright water was delicious to my feet, and I walked on it for about an hour, making perhaps a couple of hundred yards. Then the going became difficult. The current grew swifter. Great flakes or islands of foam came swirling down towards me, bruising my shins like stones if I did not get out of their way. The surface became uneven, rounded itself into lovely hollows and elbows of water, which distorted the appearance of the pebbles on the bottom and threw me off my balance so that I had to scramble to shore. But as the banks hereabouts consisted of great flat stones, I continued my journey without much hurt to my feet. An immense yet lovely noise vibrated through the forest. Hours later, I rounded a bend and saw the explanation. Before me, green slopes made a wide amphitheater, enclosing a frothy and pulsating lake into which, over many colored rocks, a waterfall was pouring.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Reading with Joy. This week, we are diving into chapters 6 and 7, where, as you can tell by our passage that Joel just beautifully read for us, our character is finally beginning to harden his feet a bit. He's able to walk over the world, and we're going to join two other characters who will look at whether or not this world of heaven is worth it. Now, I hope you enjoyed Joel's beautiful reading out loud. We'll have some more of it today. Joel is an audiobook reader. He read The Green Embers. And what else have you read?
For The Green Ember, I've also done some other children's work. I've done a book called Old Sam Dakota Trotter. I've also done a wonderful Christian fiction work called Lady and the Lionheart, which I did alongside another wonderful narrator, Gail Shalen. And so I've done sort of a smattering of things, enjoyed every single one of them. It's been a really fun journey.
So it's always fun to have him with us, both discussing and sometimes I just like listening to him read out loud bits from the book. So this week we are diving in, as I said, chapter 6 and 7, and we're looking at the way that we see the world and how we see the value in things and how that impacts whether or not the characters will come deeper into heaven. So we'll dive right into this week. Now, I will say this is the last week that Joel and I will be recording in St. Andrews because I am headed home for a break back to America. It's been a long time since I've been home, and I'm headed back on Thursday, so that's not too long from now. So the next time you hear from us, you probably won't hear from Joel next week. I might try to convince my other brother to do it with me. But the next time you hear from us, we will not be in a closet anymore, which is so sad. If you've not really, it's not that sad. But I've got kind of used to the closet. If you have been listening in, you know that Joel and I kind of have this little recording studio set up in his closet where he does his audiobooks and I do the podcast.
Yes.
And it's always an adventure to try to fit both of us in here with cups of tea or whatever else we're holding.
Indeed.
And so this will be our last week before I head back to the States.
Mm-hmm.
So without further ado, let's dive into this week's discussion. Now, to set it up, I want to say that both of these characters that we're going to read about this week, if you've already read the chapters, and we'll describe it even if you haven't, are characters who both have something and lack something, and they have the thing that the other person lacks.
That's right.
So, and another thing to note, as I already said, is that we see, I think this is kind of a hint, because you have this whole description of this beautiful world that he's beginning to explore, that our narrator is already beginning to get hardened feet. Do you think that's true, or do you think I'm making that up?
No, I think that's true. I think it's part of the sort of exploration out and describing different things besides just the grass and the trees. Yep. We're getting stones, we're getting water.
We're getting further into the world of heaven, and it seems like he's beginning to be able to bear it a little more.
Yeah, and I think actually, in some ways, this chapter, what we've just been reading, is descriptive in part because Lewis is wanting us to feel more, not just sort of have a basic sense of this as being like a more solid world. He wants us to feel it descriptively. So he's actually doing some work on our imagination as well.
And we feel like, you know, we've had this whole setting up that hell is the place where we turn inward and we diminish because we turn away from God, who is reality. And as we go further and further into heaven, we become more and more real. And so in a way, that means that the ghosts who came from hell, you know, they couldn't even walk in heaven. But now we're beginning to see our character become closer to reality. So let's look at this first ghost this week. Now, something else to notice is we have this waterfall, and there it's this beautiful thing that he describes as, you know, as bringing a melody of crashing throughout the whole wood. But it's also this thing of great danger, because while our narrator and while this other ghost are still ghosts, you think that a waterfall could kill them. And this actually is brought up by the ghost in the 7th chapter when he says, you know, any of those shards from the waterfall are like bullets. So there's this kind of sense of the beauty and the wonder of the waterfall and also of its danger. So we have this, so he's sitting there watching this beautiful scene, and then he sees this, it's the bowler hat ghost. I love how Lewis characterizes the ghost. He doesn't really give them names, which I think is interesting. Although there are characters who will have names later. And I think part of that's because there's this idea that until we get into heaven, people are characterized not by their names, but by whatever it is that keeps them out of heaven. So we have the hard-bitten ghost in the next one. I'm not sure what a bowler hat represents, if I'm quite honest.
Maybe some sort of economy or capitalism.
Yeah. I think probably capitalism. I think that's a good point. And we'll see why that's the case, because we find out that this fellow is trying to basically get something out of heaven and bring it back into hell. So the narrator watches him, and he kind of sneaks around, and he hides behind things. And then at one point, he has a wind gust goes through this apple tree that he's standing under and blows apples on him. So Joel, get the book again, and we're going to read that little passage, and then we'll discuss what it is that has gone wrong with him. So here, flip forward a couple pages. We've got my, keep going. Oh, yeah. Okay, so we'll start right... No, I think I start here. So he's been trying to fit apples in his pockets, and Lewis is like, oh, he's never going to be able to do it. He's a ghost. And then we have this.
The amazing thing was that he succeeded. When I remembered what the leaf had felt like when I tried to lift it, I could hardly help admiring this unhappy creature when I saw him rise staggering to his feet, actually holding the smallest of the apples in his hands. He was lame from his hurts, and the weight bent him double. Yet even so, inch by inch, still availing himself of every scrap of cover, he set out on his Via Dolorosa to the bus, carrying his torture. "Fool, put it down," said a great voice suddenly. It was quite unlike any other voice I had heard so far. It was a thunderous yet liquid voice. With an appalling certainty, I knew that the waterfall itself was speaking. And I saw now, though it did not cease to look like a waterfall, that it was also a bright angel who stood, like one crucified, against the rock and poured himself perpetually down towards the forest with a loud joy. "Fool," he said, "put it down. You cannot take it back. There is not room for it in hell. Stay here and learn to eat such apples. The very leaves and the blades of grass in the wood will delight to teach you." Whether the ghost heard or not, I don't know. At any rate, after pausing for a few minutes, it braced itself anew for its agonies and continued with even greater caution till I lost sight of it.
Well done, Joel. I could listen to you read all day. So, what is happening with this bowler ghost? So, on a basic level, we find out that he's trying to take the apples and take them back to hell.
And we should note at this moment that, you know, lest we think that the whole of the Great Divorce is just going to happen in this scene where
Joel just, I just set down an empty cup of something on my computer. Joel was like, don't do that. It's empty. I think it's fine. But anyway.
All is well now. But anyway, we're getting a little bit more sort of geographic narrative here, because mm-hmm. he has been drawn to this waterfall. And so mm-hmm. we're being given this sense that there is desire.
A movement inward.
Yeah, we're never quite far from desire. We got to keep remembering that, because it's easy to forget as we're getting this descriptive narrative.
There's
that this
also,
is still.
We didn't read it in this passage, but there's also a part where it says that the ghost gets exhausted and then he's pushed on by his desire, which I think is really on purpose. That Lewis is saying this bowler-hatted ghost, I think he actually is driven by desire. And something that I think that is right about this ghost is that he sees that heaven is worth it, that it's valuable. He sees it as something worth a great deal of pain. You know, he's described as the Via Dolorosa. And the Via Dolorosa is, of course, is it the way of grief or the way of sorrow? It's supposed to symbolize Christ's path to the cross. That's what the Via Dolorosa is. So it's saying that he's willing to suffer this great pain and sorrow for the fruits of heaven. So what's going wrong? And that's where we have these two different Via Dolorosas, right? Because you have the bowler-hatted ghost who's been pummeled by raindrops and apples and blades of grass, of course, because he's not solid, so he can't handle it. And that's his Via Dolorosa, is to get this apple and take it back to hell where he can sell it. And I actually think that there's something earlier in the a few chapters back, where this ghost we've already met in the on the bus talks about all the things he could go back and sell in hell. So we know that he's kind of got this idea of the value of it.
Yep.
So that's his Via Dolorosa. But then we've got this crucified figure in the waterfall. And I'm going to give my blip, Joel, and then you could just go off of me. So I think that what we have pictured here is that this ghost knows that heaven is valuable. He's drawn on by desire. He is willing to suffer a great deal for getting these apples. And I think, in a sense, the fact that he's able to suffer this much and survive, to me, says that he has already hardened a little bit. Like, there's a sense that he's not totally soft at this point. But there's this reality in that, as the crucified figure in the waterfall says, he says, put it down. We'll teach you how. The issue that this ghost has is that he thinks that he can possess heaven. And really, what he has to learn is that he has to receive heaven as a gift. And that's the picture we have of this crucified waterfall, which I think is a picture of baptism, because it's this picture of Christ's wounds being poured out. You know, that in baptism, we're baptized in water and blood, and that there's a sense that it washes us and we die in then the waters of baptism and are brought to life. And this is a very real thing for these ghosts, right? Because if they were to walk under this cruciform waterfall, presumably the water would kill them.
Yeah.
And so this, you know, it says the loud joy of the waterfall. So this is kind of a picture of Christ's sacrifice of giving everything for them, that's, you know, that fills the whole wood. If they would go under that and be willing to subject themselves to death, they would be able to taste every apple, and the very blades of grass would teach them pleasure.
Yeah.
So it seems like the problem with this is my last thing. It seems like the problem with this bowler ghost is that he recognizes the value and the joy and the goodness of heaven and the fact that he's willing to suffer all this. But what he doesn't realize is that he cannot possess it until he receives it as a gift, until he dies to himself and receives it as a free gift from the cruciform heart of Christ through baptism.
Indeed. And I would say that, you know, we've talked, you and I, not necessarily in the podcast, although we've touched upon it a little bit here and there this year, about the value of the medieval morality play,
mm-hmm.
and how it's sort of this battle of against vices, embodied vices.
I don't think we've talked about this in the podcast, so I'm going to describe it for you.
Yeah, please do.
So morality play was this medieval kind of thing where they wanted to teach people how to die. Because this kind of arose out of the fact there was so much death with the plague that they thought, we need to teach people how to be virtuous. I think we did actually talk about this mm-hmm. in one of my episodes. And so they would, like you said, you would confront these vices, and then the spirit would teach you the virtues so that you could approach death like Christ and approach it with humility and with hope of resurrection.
Yeah, and so I think in a sense we've seen this first ghost before we see the next ghost in the next chapter. We've seen this ghost sort of go on a journey which has involved
mm-hmm.
suffering,
mm-hmm.
and it has sort of the perhaps for him what he thinks is the embodied virtue of this apple, which will bring him some sort of happiness. But sort of the waterfall, I think, represents the crux, the climax of his journey, which is where he must face death. And we don't really get to know what the ending of his story is. But if he were to give into it, what the waterfall would teach him is that just as he has to give up his sort of power to control the situation and to control mm-hmm. the worth of these things and give up the worth and actually get worth out of that apple in a way that he can't even possibly imagine, he would have to go through a death of his own sort of desire to control.
Mm-hmm.
The waterfall sort of is the crux. It's sort of the hinge pin between these two chapters, and it sort of represents a powerful thing for both this
yes.
fellow and for the fellow that's coming after it.
Yes, and they both mention it. They both talk about these waters.
Yeah.
So to reiterate, I think that this image of the waterfall is the image of baptism, and it's the realization that really to embrace heaven, you have to embrace it as a gift that
yeah.
you can't do anything to deserve. And this other ghost doesn't realize that, so he goes through all this worry and trouble, and he can't quite get it. And also, it's worth noting that what the waterfall says is, "You fool! The apple won't fit into hell." And that's again this picture that heaven is bigger and so real that hell is like this kind of phantasm that couldn't even begin to hold even an apple in it.
Yeah.
All right, so we have this ghost who understands the value of heaven but doesn't understand that it's a gift. And now we have another ghost. He's called the hard-bitten ghost. He's the ghost that won't be taken in. And I'm going to have Joel read just a bit from him. So it starts right after the narrator says, "So you don't think of staying in heaven." And then read that bit.
Presumably Lewis, who is our narrator, has said, "You don't think of staying." And the hard-bitten ghost responds, "That's all propaganda," it said. "Of course there never was any question of our staying. You can't eat the fruit and you can't drink the water, and it takes you all your time to walk on the grass. A human being couldn't live here. All that idea of staying is only an advertisement stunt." "Then why did you come?" "Oh, I don't know. Just to have a look around. I'm the sort of chap who likes to see things for himself. Wherever I've been, I've always had a look at anything that was being cracked up. When I was out east, I went to see Peking. What was Peking like?" "Oh, nothing to it. Just one darn wall inside another. Just a trap for tourists. I've been pretty well everywhere. Niagara Falls, the pyramids, Salt Lake City, the Taj Mahal." "What was it like?" "Not worth looking at. They're all advertisement stunts, all run by the same people. There's a combine, you know, a world combine that just takes an atlas and decides where they'll have a site. Doesn't matter what they choose. Anything will do as long as the publicity's properly managed."
All right, so what we see with this ghost is that he absolutely cannot see the value in heaven.
Yeah.
So up to this point, for our narrator, it's been abundantly obvious that heaven is better than hell, that it's more, that this beautiful country, that even though it's painful, it's better than the dullness and the grayness of hell. But this ghost can't even see that value.
Yeah, and it's not so much that, like other ghosts, he is sort of actively working against the elements of heaven. He's not pushing away from it in fear, and he's not trying to control it out of a desire to sort of get some sort of worth out of it.
He
is existing within it. He's sort of there. He's suffering it, as it were.
But, and in a sense, he's come as far as these other two ghosts. There's a sense that he's also come further into heaven than most people have.
Yeah, that's right. But yeah, he has gone on this journey to the waterfall.
But he's come to the journey of the waterfall, and he looks at it, and he's kind of like, it's not worth anything. He says, it's not worth seeing, just like everything else on this earth is seeing.
Right.
And that's something I've actually thought about a lot when I've had people come visit, is it's actually kind of sad to me. I've seen most people, when they come to Scotland or whatever, you know, I'll give them tours and they'll think, oh, it's gorgeous and it's interesting and there's history. But it's been really sad to me. I've had one or two people who have come and they're just like, oh, it's just like anywhere else. And there's a sadness to that when you're unable to see the beauty and the uniqueness of a place. And this ghost, he takes it as it is, you know, unlike the other ghost, he sees it as a gift. And this is evident later when he kind of goes, you know, well, it's just always up to them. If it is a world combine, then he's not the one to control. So he's willing to say that. Unlike the other ghost, he's willing to say he's not in control and it's all a gift. But he doesn't see it as worthwhile. He's not drawn on by the desire of it.
Yeah. So it's almost like neither of them can receive the gift, but for the one, it's because they want to control what the gift is, and for the other one, they can see no value in anything. And for this fellow, you do feel compassion for him, because he talks about hell, and he talks about heaven, and he talks about sort of being taken in, and he shares his experience of being in the war, and how they sort of say to him, you know, just go and be a good boy, and you'll receive the joy of it later on. And he's very cynical, because he is experienced, and I'm sure Lewis is thinking of many of the people he knew in his own time, who would have either been part of, or at least sort of watched, the Great War and then World War II, and just sort of become cynical, just that they're, you know, there's this back and forth, and there's always some sort of...
It's all disappointing.
And in a certain sense, you could even say this ghost would look at the fellow in the bowler hat and say, look at that, just another person trying to manipulate something and make a buck off of it. That's just exactly what heaven and hell are all about.
And, you know, in a sense, he wouldn't be wrong. And I think it's funny, I've actually thought about this with my generation, with millennials. You know, people criticize them to high heavens, but I think one of the main things for millennials is that they're disappointed. There's a sense that they've been promised a million things, you know, whether that was successful relationships or a good economy or a job if you went to college. And there's a sense in our time where it's like, well, we've received one of the worst economies since the 1930s, and there's just kind of disappointment. And so with that disappointment, you either are just always sad, or you give into a kind of cynicism, a unwillingness to believe again that you could ever receive something as a gift. And I think that Lewis must have seen that doubly in his time when, like, this bowler ghost, or not this bowler ghost, the hard-bitten ghost, he's lived through two world wars in which he was told if he was good, if he was this, if he is that, he'd be happy, and he's just disappointed. Yeah. But of course, I think that one of the problems with that is that the Bowler Ghost, or not the Bowler Ghost, if you want to call him the Harbin Ghost, he doesn't see any value in goodness itself. He doesn't see any value in marriage in itself. Yep. He wants just the consequences of that thing. So when he says, you know, there's a part where he says, you know, they told me if I was just patient and nice, that I would eventually enjoy my marriage.
Yeah.
And the idea is that he doesn't see that marriage in itself is a good, or the goodness in itself, or that heroism in itself is a good. Yeah. He wants something out of it.
Yeah.
And he's not getting something out of it, so he's disenchanted.
And I think, you know, it's not really explained whether or not the ghosts can see what Lewis has seen, which is this Christological figure kind of Eucharistically giving himself constantly in this waterfall. But I think if the fellow in the bowler hat were able to have seen this figure, he would have known that the answer to everything is embodied in this waterfall, in which this angelic figure is representing what true goodness is, which is to give of yourself, to give of your own power and your own right to sort of control. And out of that giving comes an overflowing joy. And I think for this fellow, this hard-bitten ghost, what he would see is he would see the angel as this figure in heaven who he has come to believe, you know, heaven is just part of the management that's also conspiring with hell, and they just want the war to go on because it's a great way to keep on sort of controlling the masses. He would see this character who has nothing but self-giving, nothing but self-sacrifice, and that heaven is not in the interest of controlling him or of using him like so many other things have. It's actually interested in giving itself fully for his joy. And if he were able to give himself into this, as you say, baptism of the waterfall, it wouldn't, like he is afraid it will do.
He says, "It'll every raindrop will make a hole in you like a machine gun bullet."
Yeah, the pain of that would actually
bring him to new life.
Yeah, and in a sense, what he's doing is he's avoiding pain. He doesn't want to experience pain because he has experienced so much pain, he can't even look it in the face anymore.
And I think that cynicism is always an avoidance of pain.
Yeah.
Because the cynic gives up the right to hope anymore.
Yeah.
And in giving up the right to hope, they give up the danger they might be disappointed.
Yeah.
So you have these two very kind of different characters, right? We have, on the one hand, we have this one who is given who has a huge hope, right? He sees the value in heaven and he's willing to put up with great pains to try to take it back into hell. But it's all about him doing it. It's this kind of performance.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you have this very kind of lackadaisical, relaxed ghost who is unwilling to hope, unwilling to see the value in it. And so he can't receive, even though he kind of is, in a way, in more of a position to receive.
Yeah, and with this, the hard-bitten ghost, when he says, every raindrop will make a hole in you like a machine gun bullet, he's basically saying it's going to cause me a lot of pain, possibly even kill me.
So I don't want it.
Yeah, he's right. He's absolutely right. I mean, in all likelihood, that is what happens. I think when I first read this chapter, I thought maybe the crux of it was to wonder whether the waterfall was good or not. But I think, you know, Lewis is not wanting us to wonder whether it would, in fact, actually hurt us. I think what he's wanting us to wonder is whether that pain would indeed actually be a bad thing, or whether it would be a good thing that would transform us.
Yeah, it's funny. So this, obviously, I think I said this before, but a lot of this is coming from the Phaedrus from Plato, where you have this image of the soul ascending into hell. And there's this part where he talks about it like a toothache. He talks about the soul's desire to ascend into heaven. It's like this great pain, and that to ascend into heaven would be like pulling the tooth. And he says some people aren't willing to pull the tooth to go into heaven.
Yeah.
And this character is like that. He's not willing to pull the tooth. Mm-hmm. So we have these two characters, right? One of them sees the value, but is not able to receive it as a gift. The other one receives everything as it is, but doesn't see the value in it.
And therefore, it can't actually be
a gift. And therefore, cannot receive it as a gift. We have one who hopes too much. He hopes to take heaven into hell. And one who hopes too little. He's unable even to see heaven as heaven.
Yeah.
And so what do you think, Joel, is the, I think I have an idea of this, what do you think is the thing that we're supposed to get out of this? What should be the meaning of these two? How do we give the other one the gift at the first?
Well, I think what they both need is, I mean, the first fellow does experience pain,
mm-hmm.
and he's willing to experience pain.
Yep.
And the second fellow is not willing to experience pain. But what both of them I think it's a little bit different. I think both of them need something a little bit different, but they sort of represent two halves of the same whole.
Well,
in a sense, they need to meet each other and talk to each other.
No, that's not. I think they need each other. I don't think they really need anything different. I think they need each other.
Right.
I think that the hard-bitten ghost needs to see the value that the bowler hat ghost sees.
Yeah.
He needs to be able to see that heaven is infinitely valuable, and that even the smallest apple he could fit in his pocket would be bigger than hell. Yeah. But the Bowler Ghost Hat fellow needs to see that that it is a gift that he can receive, that it's something that he can work to understand. And both of them need to enter into the life-giving waterfall that laughs forward with loud joy.
They may not be able to do without each other.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe. That's a good thought. Yeah. They both need to be willing to go into the waterfall to basically to die and then to live again in this world. But they need to know that they both can't do that on their own. Right. So, do you have any last thoughts, or is that...
I think that's kind of my closing thought on that. I think that we will see later on, I think this is preparing us for future chapters mm-hmm. in which we will recognize that the denial of something or the repudiation of something is not a negative thing. It can actually be a very positive thing, which makes way for a much more powerful thing. You know, remember Weight of Glory. We talked about that last week or week before last, that it's not that our desires are too strong, it's that they're too weak, that we're making mud castles in the sand when we were offered a holiday at the seashore.
Well, yes, and I think that the hard-bitten ghost is definitely making mud puddles and not getting to the seashore. But yes, I think that when I think about this as a practical application for our lives, not that it always needs practical application, but I think it can get one out of this. I think that oftentimes we can tend to be one of these ghosts. We can either see the great value in life, but see ourselves as having to be our own Christ, of having to walk our own Via Dolorosa. I think I probably tend towards that. I tend to want to just go, the world is pain, but I could take it all on, and to not receive life as a gift, not receive reality as a gift. Or we can tend to be the ghost who doesn't want to be taken in. We can refuse to hope because we don't want to be disappointed. And I think that we have to find, if you are the person who refuses to be disappointed, I would say learn to open your eyes and take today to go outside and to see the world as a gift. I think back on the podcast we had a few weeks ago of doing something that doesn't compute, in the sense of going out and seeing life as a gift, not a machine, something that you can't explain, something that's worthwhile and beautiful. And if you are the ghost who works too hard, who's willing to feel pain for everyone, I would say release and let yourself receive life also as a gift. Both of them need to receive it as a gift, but in a different way. So open your eyes to the value of the world, of the beauty in it, and also let yourself receive it as a gift that you can't work to earn. All right. It's been so lovely to talk to you all. Thank you, Joel, for reading it loud and for providing discussion. And we will talk to you all next week. Make sure to go on Facebook and on Twitter and add your discussion, your questions. I've loved seeing the thoughts that you all have had. All right. Many best wishes, and I'll speak to you all soon.
Bye.